One of my early startups, every board meeting I went into was a rock throwing contest, and I was miserable. And these people were good. They weren't just smart. They were nice. But I was holding on to what I wanted to do, how I wanted to do it. A lot of times I didn't know what I was doing. And I just took all this very, what became aggressive input as confrontation rather than, Steve, read the room. Read the room. Yeah. Hello, and welcome to the Misadventures in Marketing podcast, presented by the American Marketing Association San Francisco chapter. I'm Steve Haney, fractional go-to-market executive in Silicon Valley.
And I'm Peter Farrago, head of marketing in Silicon Valley. Each week, Steve and I come together to talk about all things in high-tech marketing.
We share our own experiences running marketing teams with a special focus on technology startups. We talk about our successes, our failures, what worked, and what didn't. We also periodically invite our CMO colleagues and other marketing friends onto the show every once in a while. And hopefully we impart some wisdom along the way. Peter Farrago, how's it going, man?
It's going pretty good. Cannot complain. As we've mentioned, we're in the thick of the school year, making some adjustments to how much homework our youngest is actually doing for obvious reasons. But work is chugging along, exciting times in school and life. So I cannot complain. I haven't gotten a flu shot yet. It's that season. I got to start thinking about that.
We went in and the whole family, it's just easier. We find a slot and all of us go in at the same time. We got our COVID and our flu. Got that done.
Nice. Very I'm up easy. To date on COVID. Yeah.
And I have my 17-year-old. She's starting to apply to colleges. So we're doing
stressful
all that.
And exciting. Yeah.
Understanding all the FAFSA stuff and the financial aid and that nightmare dealing with that. So we're keeping busy as well. And I guess gearing up for the holidays, it's different. You know, the girls are at a certain age and I think things have gotten easier. You know, you don't have to keep them entertained because they're entertaining themselves at this point and going out. So anyway, what is our topic this week? What are we supposed to be blabbing about?
Board
meetings. That's right. Board tales. Board I'm telling you, my very first startup, every board meeting was just a nightmare. I mean, because I didn't know what I was doing. It was my very first startup. It was a bunch of angels, which is fine, and they were really good. But, you know, that there's that old saying, every board meeting is a job interview for the CEO. Right. And you could go and you can lose or keep your job based on, you know, what happens in every board meeting.
Board meetings are hard for people because there isn't a lot of training for like, what is the right type of thing to talk about at a board meeting? And you have to balance showing confidence, both hands on the steering wheel, but at the same time, being humble and taking feedback. And inviting that and allowing that from a group of people who don't work day to day in your company.
Right. And I know this is a bit of a, trope at this point, but it's what I didn't understand when I was CEO of my first startup, but I totally get now. And that is, you can't go in viewing it as adversarial as a CEO or any other executive on the management team. They're collaborators and they're there to work with you to make the company successful. Certainly as a CEO, you should be calling them a week beforehand. What do you think we should talk about? Well, here's what I want to do, blah, 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 and knock that out. But when you're in there, you start giving them things to do, right? Because they want to make the company successful as well. Everybody's got to be on the same page and know what we're trying to accomplish. And it's kind of one of those things where the meeting at that point is just a series of decision-making. You've already had the conversations beforehand. When I sent out my board packages, it was always like, any questions about the board package, right? This is after I got fairly good at this. And if they said no, or they had one or two questions, it's fine. Okay, let's get to work now. All right. And I tried to turn every board meeting into a working meeting where, okay, I need you to go do this. I need you to make these introductions. Here's what I'm going to go do here. Does this make sense? What do you think I should do here? Blah, 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 blah. And then it just became a series of knocking things out. And I think when you're going in presenting, and let me tell you, the last few board meetings I had as a marketing exec, I just had nothing good to present, right? But the CEO wanted me there to say something. But we were at such early stages, there just wasn't much to talk about because I was, you know, building this marketing team from scratch. And I could talk about certain accomplishments and certain things we did, but I did it really badly. Peter, you've told me what you've done, and I think you do it really well. Why don't you say a little bit about how you prep and what you talk about?
So what I'd say is there's a couple attitudes. One is I think about right-sizing the message to the board. So for like small to, you know, growth stage companies, it's a more hands-on meeting. You're educating them about the business. You're reporting performance. You know, here's what we're building. Here's what customers are saying. So it'll be much more operational and it'll be a little more of a readout. I think there's an understanding of what a board can and can't do for you. Usually it's about introductions. That's usually mm-hmm. what the board is best at. You want them for their network. Those people, while smart, a lot of them very educated, you know, like most of the board members I have, they went to Harvard for their MBA or Stanford, some of them have PhDs. These guys are super smart is the point, and they are not in your business day to day, but they have pattern recognition. They need to pattern match like your revenue growth, your mm-hmm. roadblocks you're dealing with, your brand building, your demand gen, your lead pipeline, your revenue pipeline. These are the things they look for. So you have to kind of up level everything like you're talking to executives, like really big executives, but you also have to overlay that with they're not in your business day to day and they're going to say a lot of things not in the language you always use that are kind of smart, but also a little bit confusing sometimes because they're talking about things in generalities they see across companies and they're mm-hmm. trying to sound smart and useful in the moment to you. So there can be this loss in translation thing I find as well. The other thing I would say about putting the board to work is our CEO does a pretty good job of kind of what I call the readout and allowing people to react to that. Our CEO is also just a very organized person. So he's very organized in giving them the materials ahead of the board meeting and having two topics that we're going to discuss that are pertinent to the business that are going to be part of the second part of the meeting. This is a small thing you have to learn is when to get up and leave the meeting. So there's a closed door session. The CEO is going to talk about some logistics like hiring people and the total equity pool and maybe even their own compensation or maybe there's legal stuff. And so there's the open session, which I go to as an executive.
Right.
And then there's a closed session usually at the end. If you're early in your career or you're just going to meetings for the first time, it might be obvious to you. But like when you hit the end of the presentation, you're looking for like, I got to get up and walk out. So it's like, oh, thank you, everybody. And you get up and you leave. Yeah. Because you're not part of that group.
Well, you know, I have used board meetings also as a way to, make friends and influence people, whatever the classic Dale Carnegie phrase is. So I can, you know, further marketing's agenda within the company. In one instance, I was in the middle of a big rebranding, and one of the board members was from a marketing background. They were really into what we were doing and very excited. This person sat on other boards and they couldn't do everything, but I always kept them in the loop. They sat in on a couple of meetings and it was a way for me to build that relationship with them. Whenever marketing issues came up, they were more likely to be our ally, right? And move things along.
Yeah, if a board member has a skill set or is inviting you to meet them, of course you are. The CEO is the lonely job. The CEO can have pressure from the board. The CEO can have pressure from underneath. The CEO's business may or may not be working in general. They're trying to hire, they're trying to manage cash, they're trying to manage ego sometimes, incompetence other times. And so sort of job number one is to be on the CEO's team and to make life better for them. I think that you just have to avoid surprises in general, and that includes with the CEO, letting the CEO lead, as I've said. It is great to build relationships. Just don't use the board politically. The other thing I find, and this is maybe more of a matter of earlier stage stuff, is VCs in Silicon Valley, on average, I think it's by nature of the incentives and the way venture capital works, is that you are looking for big hits, you know, 10, 20, 30x returns. And so as a result, they push their companies to like grow faster, to spend more if they feel like there's some early traction. And oftentimes, you know, you're trying to stay in the game as long as you can and iterate and sometimes pivot to find success. It's very hard to operate and do that. While we don't have an adversarial relationship with the board, we definitely think differently sometimes. And I have to be on the side of the company. Mm-hmm. And there's a way to do that.
Yeah, I was about to say, you know, You have an adversarial board, that should never, ever, ever happen. Ever. I mean, that.
But it happens. There's hostile boards. Yeah.
Yeah. But listen, the management team has to, you know, I'll say it again. They have to get aligned. They have to. I mean, they need to understand that, you know, if they aren't aligned with the board, because what's happening there is the management team wants to do something different than what the board wants it to do. I don't want to say you need to give up on your vision, but you need to give a little to get a little. As wrong as you think it may be, the dysfunction between the management team and the board is way more damaging than not being aligned with the board and going off and doing something that may succeed or it may fail horribly. And again, I have been there. One of my early startups, every board meeting I went into was a rock throwing contest, and I was miserable. And these people were good. And they were really, they weren't just smart, they were nice. But I was holding on to what I wanted to do, how I wanted to do it. A lot of times I didn't know what I was doing. And I just took all this very, what became aggressive input as confrontation rather than, Steve, read the room. Read the room. Yeah.
In theory, the only two things a board at an earlier stage company has control of is who the CEO is and whether or not they do a follow-on investment. That's it. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of it is just about, do they have confidence in the direction? So the purpose of a board meeting for a startup, you know, is educating them about the business and reporting performance, and it's going to be more hands-on. You should expect feedback on the product and go to market plans and hiring and fundraising, right? It's going to be more interactive and collaborative. They're going to act more like advisors and an extended team. And you tend to want to focus on what's changing fast, like your runway or key customer wins and losses, you know, product market signals. It's more real time. At a large company, it's much more about oversight, and governance, and risk management, and their fiduciaries first, right? So it's going to feel more formal. It's going to have a certain agenda, right? And committee updates and financials and so forth. And so it's much more about reporting against plan, because you do formal planning, like revenue plan for the year, and you report your actuals versus plan and the delta and all that, right? So it's about controls, compliance, long-term strategy. It's not day-to-day. So we're going to focus more on earlier stage, and I think earlier stage is less adversarial. Was it Mike Ditka, the famous Chicago Bears coach, said something like, you know, the best deodorant is success. So, you know, show the numbers and everything's better. But, you know, transparency builds trust. So that's why you show the wins and the losses. I'd mentioned that before. Mm-hmm. When you ask for help from the board, It should be very specific and frame it 2 to 3 key questions, right? That makes it more collaborative and not interrogative, but you still mm-hmm. have to report like a readout. The contentious topics before the meeting. This is the meeting before the meeting stuff, right?
Right.
Meet with individual directors one-on-one. That way the group session hopefully can be more about solutions and not ambushes, right? You don't mm-hmm. want them hearing bad news for the first time as a group in the meeting. That's just poor board management.
Yeah.
And you know, you need to, if you're the leader, you need to make time for that.
You know, with one of my companies, and this was after the dot-com bust, and even though we were not a dot-com company, we were a technology company selling into carriers, you know, mobile carriers. We had sold the company for, you know, pennies on the dollar. Somebody who was part of the acquisition, I liked his metaphor, it was like Steve landed the plane.
Yeah.
All the other planes during the dot-com thing had just crashed and blown up, but I landed mine, right? And, you know, my investors got something, you know, not yeah. a lot. But anyway, I met with a board member a few months after the dust had settled. And she was going on about how she felt that we were put in a bad position because during the dot-com boom, all these investors got very greedy.
Yes.
This was her phrasing. And, you know, I was kind of shocked to hear this, but she felt that that had warped how the board meetings were run, how it was being looked at, you know, all the board meetings, for me at least, they weren't so much contentious as they were, as I said at the beginning of this podcast, they were just keeping you up at night, kind of anxiety instilling exercises. And so, you know, it's, you never know what's going on, right? You know, and how these dynamics are driving things and what the investors think in one instance comes back and, you know, the completely different point of view in another instance and, you know, all these dynamics. So anyway, do you have any stories, anecdotes, insights that you want to share out of a board meeting?
Gosh. My early days, I left, you know, I was post MBA, was at EA. I went to a startup called Digital Chocolate, which was a very high flying mobile game company. It was like, you know, Sequoia and Kleiner backed, and Mike Moritz from Sequoia was on our board, who's a legendary guy.
Legendary, yeah.
I was called in frequently to give some updates. And he used to be a reporter, by the way, a big mm-hmm. time reporter. So he was
time
good at asking hard questions. He pulled me aside. I think we had some big bets on some product lines, like, do we do games or non-games for the mobile era and certain kinds of games, you know, because it's expensive to build a game and get distribution. So like, so now I've got this guy who's a board member from Sequoia asking me about basically checking the logic and the direction of a legendary CEO that I work for. And mm-hmm. I cannot remember what I said to him, but I tried to be very fair and balanced and honestly just shut the fuck up and get out of there. Like,
right.
It was very, very nerve-wracking, honestly. VCs and entrepreneurs often don't respect each other. I'm just going to say this. Sometimes they do. Mostly they don't. You know, your typical VC wears khaki pants and a button-down, you know, shirt, rolled-up sleeves, and has a puffy sleeveless, you know, vest on.
Right.
And he talks about, you know, went on family vacation renting a private yacht off the coast of Turkey with a private chef.
Right.
Or he's parasailing. Like, there's a list of jokes of all the ridiculous, off-the-beaten-path,
right.
crazy recreational sports that VCs do. And mostly VCs kind of don't, this is not really true, but there's a perception they don't do much. It's sort of like, well, they convinced a group of people to give them money and they allocate the money and it's dumb luck. And they don't really know what it takes to run a company or build value. They wrote the check and they know they want to get this many dollars back for every dollar they put in. And all they do is ask you about it in lots of different ways. Whereas the, you know, the investor will look at the entrepreneur and be like, these guys are precious. They're prima donnas.
Right.
Like, there is this contention. So we talk about operators versus investors. And so, you know, there is that underlying tension, and probably on both sides, depending on how savvy and competent the person is, each side is working with some insecurity.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're more senior and they have control over their lives, it can be very dangerous. So, for example, you don't tell a VC that you're going to do something in the meeting, especially if you're not the CEO, right? You say, I really like that feedback. And you have to do that in a way that doesn't sound like you're brushing them off, where you're really sincere and you do want to partner with them, but you have to recognize they're not operators, they're investors. They have different incentives and they want different things from you.
Right.
They
Even
care about
different
things.
Even if they were operators before, they shifted.
They also just don't have
the
experience.
They don't have the, or the experience they had as an operator in, say, your function, which is marketing or engineering, was not real, right? Like maybe they did a few things and that it was.
Yeah, they did a couple tours of duty to flesh out their resume, right?
Before going off to be a VC. Yeah. I was in a board meeting where I was presenting, you know, basically the state of the lead funnel. And our sales guy, who was, you know, classic Silicon Valley, aggressive enterprise software sales guy.
Yeah.
With the whole cowboy framework of like, all these people work for me. I am the pinnacle of, you know, the business. And because I'm the one that closes the deals and, you know, I control it all. And the success is mine and the failures are somebody else's. Very much this mentality. And I put up a slide showing that I always shoot for at least 50% of a quarter's closed won deals to be marketing originated. At this company, it was 70%. And this VP of sales in the meeting made some kind of like, wait, what? Huh? And I looked at him, I said, yeah. And he's like, oh, no, never mind. I'm like, no, let's, I mean, 70% of all the close one deals this quarter were marketing originated. You know, my people did that. And he's like, yeah, that's fine. Go on. Anyway, it was one of those weird moments.
But this is a classic problem of like, who's important. I mean, the rule of thumb I've heard of from a very experienced CEO is around Series C. And this might be changing depending on the company. The head of revenue becomes almost more, I mean, to the board, more important than the CEO. Because they're reporting on revenue, whether they're the ones in charge of making it happen entirely or not. They're, to your point, they're associated with it. The other thing I'll say from a startup standpoint, a good rule of thumb is if you're going to a startup where the CRO got promoted to the CEO, you should not go.
Yeah.
It means that the company has had problems strategically, somehow,
yep.
Product-wise, strategy-wise.
Short-term.
They're focused on short-term, pumping up revenue as much as they can for the sale. Even if that CRO is really good, because I remember talking to one company where the CRO was running it and seemed like actually a super competent person, but it just, you know, you could just tell something was slightly off. It was like, sprint for short-term results and unload the company, right? We've talked about a lot of stuff and some scary stuff, but like if you're called on to present at a meeting, what are we trying to communicate? What would you ideally like to communicate or have the board take away from this?
Mm-hmm.
Because different teams, like I come luckily from almost every startup I've been at understands that it's about being transparent with your board and that you don't hide anything from the board. Usually bad things happen. The meetings happen before the meetings anyway. But if you're just going into a meeting and you're getting asked, you're kind of getting a show ponied, right? You're like, hey, this guy's smart. This woman's smart. Let's get this person in the meeting and they'll present a little part of it. And it makes me look good as an executive that I'm showing off my team, the board. They have other reasons for doing it. Play along with that, but get context is my point. You know you're going to keep it way shorter than you think. Probably 25% of what you want to communicate is all you communicate. You want to go facts and figures, high impact, tie it back to revenue or cost savings or something. And you want to ask for context.
Rule of three, you know, just maybe three main points. Boom. Yeah. Done. Not too.
But yeah, I wouldn't try to guess. I would ask. This is my point. Oh, you're going to get interrupted, by the way. They're going to interrupt you.
Yep.
Sometimes there's a very quiet room and they just let you do your thing and they know you're kind of junior in the grand scheme of things and they're being cool and they're just letting you present and it's interesting. But oftentimes the board, it's designed to be interactive and they will. So that's why have three things, have it be very clear and be okay with being interrupted. Don't get defensive or thrown off and know the score going in. Know like, what am I trying to communicate? What do I want them to take away? How transparent should I be? And then I was going to say the last thing logistically is, I assume I'm not starting with the meeting and I'll be asked to come in. Like, how will you let me know? Because, well, board meetings don't run on time or they're getting interrupted anyway. And so I think you'll maybe around, you know, be available between 10:30 and 11:30 and I'll Slack you and maybe you walk in physically to the room or maybe you get dialed in. It depends on the thing, but know that. You're a marketer. You should know how to present. You should know how to understand an audience, but you need to extract information so you don't like weirdly create unknown tension or just waste everyone's time and they're yawning.
My thing has always been when I walk out the door, I want them to feel that marketing's in good hands. You stick to the data. You're absolutely right about the interruptions, right? So maybe plan for 15 minutes, but know you're going to get five. So maybe plan for five.
It's not going to be on time.
And then just
you might even be told by your CEO, hey, Steve, you know, thanks for coming in. You know, things are running a little late. Can you just give us the highlights? And like, you should be prepared for that.
You should have that.
You might get derailed by your own boss because like they are running out of time and they want to hear this, but not all of it.
You know, show that confidence.
Yeah.
Show that comfort level. You want them, everybody in that room, to say, okay, the marketing team has got its stuff together and we feel comfortable and good. That part of the business is on track.
And it's another thing to take note of if you're coming in is your CEO may be under a lot of pressure. So also just keep that in mind. This day is not about you.
Yeah. Peter, I think that is a good place to wrap up.
Yeah.
Do you want to read us out?
I want to thank our audience for listening. This would not be possible without our great editors, Lorenzo Fernandez-Kopek at Peakbound and Brian Douglas at the Creative Commonwealth. They make us sound and look good. And I think that the post-production is probably one of the larger workloads of this whole thing. So thank you sincerely. Our marketing maven, Ian Robinson-Lambert, who gets all the word out on social and other places. Julianne Bornalis, who will be the next person to listen to this and really hack down all the bits that are no good. She's our consulting producer. She's very experienced in volunteering her time. We appreciate that. Renita Dutta, who is our head of content for the AMASF and does all the prep for us with research and script writing and data and stuff. So thank you, Renita, for all the work you do. And then Thomas Moyer, our president of the AMA San Francisco chapter, as always, thanks for his support. Our sponsor is Workbox, a web agency who specializes in the pharma and healthcare industry. Eric Widener, who's the CEO there, we appreciate his support and his company's support for me.